At the end of your life, what will be your legacy? What will you leave behind for future generations? For the world, join the world messenger, Isabella Lundberg. Each week as she brings you a new distinguished guest from the business, sports, or entertainment world to share their success, their struggles, and their lessons. They will share their insights into current hot topics that affect everyone. Isabella facilitates an intimate, vulnerable environment to find the true value of humanity and real leadership. Are you ready for your legacy? The legacy that matters?
If you had an opportunity to speak with someone with over 24 years of experience, not only working for a federal business investigation agency, but also having an opportunity to focus on espionage and so many things with foreign affairs that are affecting with classified information and secrets internally in our country, but also internationally in government sector, as well, obviously, in public environments, what would you ask? If we also had a chance to look at for someone who was spy and had an opportunity to establish herself in operation in Silicon Valley and deal with some really most intricate issues and challenges and still navigate them successfully, what would you ask her? Guess what? I am super thrilled to invite you for another epic episode here on the Legacy Leader Show. And I cannot wait for us to deep dive with today's guest. Not only she is obviously coming for 24 years of experience working as an agent, but she also brings plethora of knowledge as a facilitator, trainer, speaker, published author of two amazing books, and so much more. Without further ado, let me introduce you to today's guest, Lorraine Kwai. Hello, Lorraine.
Thank you so much, Isabella. Thank you for having me as your guest.
It's absolute honor and pleasure, and I'm super thrilled. Actually, this is your second time that we're having you on the Legacy Leader Show, and I cannot wait to unleash some of these really powerful current events that we're seeing that are happening in our country, how, from the leadership perspective, how they're having implications on public and private sector, but also specifically leaders and specifically female leaders.
Oh, absolutely. You know, you and I both write for Forbes, and I can't even count the number of times I've seen articles come up or you know, questions come up about how to find the right job and what to do to find the right job. But I find that most of the advice out there is just backwards, because they'll say, you know, the advice by experts will be, you know, tune in or zone in on the values of the company, right? And make sure that you understand their mission statement and their purpose and all of that. But really, that should come at the end. What really needs to come first is for people to understand their own values. Because so often, what are you trying to do? Fit something round into a square hole? Maybe those aren't your values. The company could be a fine company, but in our quest to just get a job, I guess, or, you know, we all know of people who graduate from college and they get a job and they are young and they're energetic and smart. So, and they see people ahead of them who had been there longer and they just start nipping at their heels, right? And they pretty soon they run over those older folks or those that have been there for a while because they're ambitious, right? But something happens somewhere, usually around 40s or even 50s or even earlier, where you just sit there and you say, why am I doing this? I don't even like what I'm doing. And that's why a lot of people, suddenly they're the ones getting run over by the newer people on the block. And it's because they haven't really tied their values to the values of the company or what they're doing. So I really feel that that is the first place for people to start, understanding your own values and then seeking a position in a corporation or company that supports those values.
That is such an excellent perspective, because that struggle will be so much more diminished when you know when you're self-aware of who you are and what matters to you, where your strengths are, where your weaknesses and opportunity for growth and improvement. And with your tremendous career, with all the things you've been accomplished, we didn't even touch the surface, obviously, where you've been, where you appeared, series of FBI career paths that you had exposure to, even media and conversations with some major platforms, and sharing your opinions with opportunities for others to really understand, to grasp, right? It's like when you know self, now you're part of the environment, and now you know how to apply yourself and reach the tremendous goals and objectives. So do you mind sharing now a little bit about that? Because you are a perfect role model, what that looks like. And your achievements are exponential. Obviously, being able to speak on ABC News and contributing to interviewing for Wall Street Journal and New York Times, a Good Morning America, and et cetera. Obviously, your thought process and thought leadership not only tremendously helped during your tenure with Federal Business Investigation, but also for other corporations.
Well, I was an FBI agent for 24 years, and all of that time, most of it, the first 20 years, I spent working counterintelligence and espionage. So that really required, that position required me to develop the self-awareness in myself and emotional intelligence, where I could go out and speak to just about anybody. And my job was to develop trust, was to develop a relationship. Now, we were on different sides of the fence. I mean, I'm talking to foreign spies in the United States to steal classified or proprietary information. So I actually had a target of one of my investigations. I met with him. I didn't tell him my name, but we had a nice conversation. And then I said, oh, do you have a business card? And he gave me his, and then I gave him mine. It was the first time he realized I was an FBI agent. And I could just see his hand trembling as he made his way towards accepting that card. But the point here is that the ability to develop relationships, have the emotional intelligence to be able to understand where somebody else is coming from and relate to them, even if you don't agree with them, which in today's political world would be a godsend, wouldn't it? But then when I became the spokesperson for the FBI in Northern California, and I was there for 4 years, I had to talk to everybody. I mean, I had the ACLU invite me to their luncheon, and I knew I was just their target, you know, for poking fun at or asking me, you know, why are you abusing the civil rights of citizens? And I had to defend the FBI. So to do that, I had to really believe in what I was doing. And I tell you, the first job I took was as in a department store, at a fancy department store, right? Because I like to, you know, dress up. And I thought, oh my God, this will be just, you know, wonderful playground for me. But I hated the job because I had failed to ask what we started out with. What do I value in life? And it was certainly more than polka dots versus stripes, right? So when I got to the FBI, and I realized that internally, FBI stands for fidelity, bravery, and integrity. Voila. I struck pay dirt because those were values I also cherished. So I was able to take that into conversations with not only my targets, but also with the media. And the media, when it comes to, you know, reporting the news, negative headlines always grab more attention. And so they're sensational, they're negative. And so my job was to calm them down and at least try to provide a balanced point of view so they understood the other side of the story. So again, the ability to communicate and develop relationships has always been paramount.
That's outstanding. And I love then how you were able to leverage your emotional intelligence that you further developed and your emotional capacity to handle such a sensitive topics. And right now, as you mentioned, we're seeing a lot of polarities and a lot of conflicts, and that resonates and reflects not only in political arena, but also in business arena, right? We see things, how certain behaviors are being right now shown amongst the leader or leader that are considered to be leaders based on their titles and authority, but not necessarily leadership skill set. So I'm sure you have a strong opinion about what you see that is missing and where some of the opportunities are. Do you mind sharing a little bit about that?
Well, that's a great question, Isabella. I tell you, when the rubber meets the road, in my situation, what I've always relied on is authenticity. So I may not agree with somebody, or I may have an opposing opinion, and it happens in all aspects of our life, and business included, where you need to understand where that we like we talked about where the other person is coming from. But if I can be authentic, that is something you can't fake. And I know fake it till you make it, that's kind of a popular term right now. And perhaps you can to some degree, but at some point you can't fool all the people all the time. And I've had some really hairy experiences working undercover where I was working against gangs and extortionists and murderers, and they questioned, they saw, it wasn't me so much, it was the guy I was with, right? I was supposed to be the arm charm in this undercover barbecue. But the thing is, they cornered me and they isolated me, and I knew I was in deep trouble. And so I just said, I got to drop all of this. I have to be who I truly am. And so I shared with them my love of animals and dogs and horses and my background on a Wyoming ranch. And I was just who I really was. I told them everything except my true name and my employment. But that saved me that day. The guy I was with, actually, they put a hit out on him, but no mention was ever made of me. And it was because I was authentic. And what I learned from that very scary experience was that basically you can slap whatever badge you want on your lapel. And it may say VP or CEO, president, whatever. But I found that the gig was up if I wasn't my real self. And I never ran into problems working undercover, because this badge you're wearing doesn't mean anything really. What matters is who you are and how you express yourself and how vulnerable and authentic you can be in a healthy way. I mean, you don't want to come across as a, 90-pound weakling, but the point is to be who you truly are, because people have this BS monitor that most people, it's pretty finely tuned. And even though we may not be aware of it, when somebody starts feeding us a line, bells go off. And if you're trying to do this to your team or other people, believe me, they're going to see through it. So that's my first piece of advice.
I love that, because right now we see so much authority, our demanding of that authority, but lack of accountability and responsibility or expectations that people will follow. And we're seeing some really unprecedented trends. Let us take a look at what's going on in corporate arena. And we're seeing so much demands, for example, to come from remote work to office. And we're learning that a lot of companies use that to see who they're going to weed out and who is going to let leave on their own versus whom they need to let go and pay compensation, because they're also trying to operate lean or shrink their current pool or preserve financially or whatever might be motivations. We're seeing a lot of different cause and effects, right, that are also creating a lot of friction, where employers are start wondering why we're not as respected as a brand or as a company, or why people are leaving such a negative reviews about their experiences about C-suite or CEO or a general working environment. And as a result, we feel like it's such a different need here more than ever to be exercised and practiced. What do you see right now that is missing, and where will be some really great solutions?
Well, actually, when you look at the business model, the current business model we have right now, primarily that was the result of post-World War II thinking. And we had a lot of folks come in from the Army, all the armed services, and they were put in leadership positions because they had proven their leadership abilities. And they created a structure that was very military in operation and in appearance. Unfortunately, that's what we're still doing. You still see that sort of hierarchy that you see in government and in most business. But times are changing. And you mentioned cause and effect. I mean, we are in a different world now than we were in 1947 or 1950. And the whole, the whole COVID thing, the whole remote working, it's a natural and healthy shift from this sole focus on just wringing out everything they can from an employee, because they have the power to do that, to actually inviting them to join in. And part of that, again, goes back to, why are you there to begin with? I mean, is it just a paycheck? Or are you doing something, or something within your position that can really make a contribution to something other than yourself? And really, when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, most people, if they want to stay motivated, you want your employees to be motivated, you want to stay unmotivated, you have to understand that it's more than just about you, that you are making a contribution in some larger sense. It may not change the world, and that's not important. If you're a checkout clerk at a grocery store, maybe your day is just making a client feel good about themselves. If you're the CEO, your goal may be something a wee bit different. But the point is, you really, as a leader and in corporations, if we want to bring people along, we have to do just that, bring them along. So it's developing, again, relationships, it's setting clear boundaries, and it's mentoring, especially when it comes to women. I would love to see more realistic expectations of mentoring. Because I'll tell you, in the FBI, I didn't have a mentor. There wasn't even a female on my squad. Are you kidding? And if one of these guys were told that, you know, I was their, they were my mentor, I mean, they'd laugh in my face and run. And so you have to evaluate. Every environment is different. And for me, I just had to find and identify those agents who are doing an amazing job, who were successful. They never knew that they were my mentor, but I copied them. I watched them. I imitated, because I knew they had the sauce, the secret sauce. And so mentorship can take a lot of different forms. And I don't think women need to decry the fact that, you know, there's no official mentorship program for them. There can be formal ones and there can be informal ones. So, but it applies to men as well. I mean, I wasn't the only one marginalized on those squads. It was anybody who was seen as less competent or not a go-getter. So, I mean, you know, we all fit into that category. And some of that responsibility is on the employee and some is on management, to allow people to discover where they fit in and how they can fit in better.
Wow, that is so eye-opening. I'm sure that everybody watching and listening can relate to that. And I love what you said. We have to know what's responsibility in our own individual contribution, what is on us, how do we show up in that working environment, which is so eye-opening right now for everybody. It's like, are you keeping up with technology? Are you nimble? Are you willing to be, again, trained, mentored, but also to change, right? Are you resisting that? And on the other hand, how is the employer showing up, and are they creating ongoing professional development, which we know that is the least what they do. And that's where they completely, consistently, we're seeing statistics skewing on, which is such a, again, a big, huge issue. And as a result, we're seeing evidence of it, right?
Absolutely. And when you said something that sparked a thought in me, because I was just reading that some recent studies have shown that the hybrid situation work environment works really well. They estimate at current research shows that 3 days showing up in the office is optimal and the other is remote. And again, it's creating a new way of working in the workplace, because you want your people to be motivated. But you pointed out something very important, and that was ongoing training, ongoing learning, because so often we've heard it before, the Peter principle, you know, you're promoted to the point of incompetence. And unfortunately, that there's a lot of truth in that. We all need continual training and to keep ourselves sharp. I mean, we can get dull. We're in a situation, we understand it, we feel comfortable, and we stop encouraging ourselves or prompting ourselves to learn more. We think we know it all already. What more is there to learn? There's always more to learn. And I think that's, you hit it right on the head, Isabella, something that's really lacking right now in business.
And with that in mind, obviously you've been a adjunct professor, you've been teaching and graduate students, you've been also contributing what you learn, speaking of the learning, right? And being not only phenomenal mentor, phenomenal colleague and friend, but also obviously opportunity to really impact positively future generations. So for someone who has been teaching persuasion, and persuasion theory, and also some other components, you arrived to something that I love personally because of seeing how important it is to develop and establish mental health or mental strength, but also more than anything, the mental toughness. So do you mind sharing, how did you arrive? What did you learn? And what did you saw as a gaps and how did you solve them?
Oh, that's a great question. I base all my work on neuroscience and psychology because it's one thing for Lorrae Quai to be spouting off something, you know, but I back it up with statistics. And in the FBI, one of the first things I learned is that while theories are nice, evidence is better. So yes. I always present the evidence behind the thought behind what I say and what I write. And it's interesting because research has shown there's really the difference between regular and people and ultra successful people is that they are the ultra successful. It's not that they thrive so much under pressure, it's because they're better able to mitigate its negative effects. And so that all pops into the way we think. That's our, you know, you change your mindset, you change your behavior, you change the outcome. So mental toughness is really a mindset about how you look at life. You know, unfortunately, too many articles and books and stories about mental toughness sort of have this battle ready mentality that promise to kind of show people how to take care of their, or how to take control of their own destiny. And, you know, the swagger in your step may be intimidating from a distance, but it won't prepare you for the hard battles in life. So, I mean, you know, it's one thing, they think mental toughness is snow plowing their way through obstacles. And that might work in football or in a snow drift, but not in business and life. So we really need to think about how we can change our mindset, use our mind. And the thing is, the mind, we just keep growing. We used to think that the brain stopped growing after about the age of 25. That is not no longer. We have neuroplasticity. And that just means our brain continues to learn. We can be 85 years old and still learn something new. And with that mindset, it's like a petri dish. You've always got something out there. You want to try something that may be a bit different. And that's so when I say, when you're mentally tough, you can accurately identify the emotions you feel, both good and bad. Because if you try to deny everything that's negative, you're going to miss out on some very important input. Because the brain's, our first reaction is always emotional. And that's just the way our brain is wired. And it's because it's to keep us safe. If you feel something that's negative, you're going to pay more attention to it. It's why newspapers always hit on negative stories or negative headlines. So trying to combat that as a spokesperson was tough. But persistence, just keeping at it, and keeping your emotions under control is huge. So I would just say for mental toughness, really one of the most important things to remember is that you can control your mindset. If you have control over your mindset, which means you have to have control over your emotions, because those negative emotions will run all over you if you're not careful when you're faced with adversity or setback.
Which again brings that connection to emotional intelligence, right? And also level of emotional capacity to handle now more than ever plethora of complexities. When we for first time really truly see multiple and at least 5 to 10 different high priorities that we have to then deprioritize and then understand yes. How they're playing out because of complexities that we're seeing in working environment and economy, as well as structure, right? That is, as you mentioned earlier, being built on something that needs to change, needs to improve, because we need innovative solutions from individual contributors all the way to team dynamics and organizations, and as well, obviously, as a nation's outcomes regards to where we are headed and what we're trying to achieve. That is also something that obviously you had a chance to experience and firsthand apply in C-suite, which both of us played quite a bit of time, and specifically comes to coaching of leaders and understanding any direction, that vision, the mission, and how that's going to be executed upon. I'm curious, when we look at through this right now, Lorraine, where do you see things going? Because I know that obviously old container, it's not anymore suitable, right? It's killing that great innovation and opportunity to really see what's possible on individual level as well on collective. I'm curious, where do you think things are headed and how this can really build and remove those obstacles that we're talking about?
You know, when people ask me a question like that, I always say self-awareness is the first place to start, because until you understand where those roadblocks are in your life and in your thinking, and I just find so many times people are their own worst enemies because they just don't have the confidence in themselves, or they're afraid that if they admit they need training or they need to upgrade their thinking, that it is weakness. And they need to feel, or they feel that they need to present this aura of invincibility and strength and knowledge. And so that is correct. And in C-suites, your image is very important. So I'm not denigrating that at all. But to marry that with an understanding that we could all be better people, we all can be resilient. And, you know, it's interesting when you think about what resilience really is, and this, I think, falls into what you're asking, because people need to understand how they can help themselves and their people do a better job, and do it in a way that's going to not just fall into the same old rut. And, you know, I always say the difference between a rut and a coffin are the dimensions. So you stick in that rut long enough, that's just where you're going to stay. But I like to encourage people to, you know, find different ways of doing things. And if you look into resilience itself, there's like four major components to resilience. And one is being a positive thinker. And that's not being an optimist, because an optimist believes things will work out in the end. A positive thinker doesn't necessarily believe that, but they know that they believe that they can prevail in their circumstances, even if their circumstances don't change. So that's the thing about being a positive thinker. The second thing is to really, what we started this conversation out with, believe in what you're doing. Mm-hmm. If you believe in what you're doing, I mean, these are the components of resilience that have been put together by the U.S. Army and by psychologists in the early 2000s, I believe. But you have to believe in what you're doing. So this isn't just Lorraine speaking. This is embedded in research. Again, do your values, you know, coincide with the values of your company or what you're doing? The third thing is having a support group. It can be family, but family is a movable feast in this day and age. So it's people who relate to you, who understand you, your tribe, so to speak. And I know tribes can be controversial because it's, you know, you're excluding others, but you need that group of people who get you and understand you. And the fourth component is some sort of spiritual practice. It doesn't mean religion or going to church or mosque or synagogue. What it means is believing in something that's bigger and better and bolder than yourself, that you are not your own God. And these four components, if you really work that into the culture of your company or your team becomes that support network. You can hash out, what is it that I really value here? What is it that I'm willing to keep moving no matter what? I have a determination to keep going on. And just the fact that there's a lot of ways to experience something outside of yourself in the spiritual realm. And those four components really are the starting points for building resilience with your team or your company.
Wow. Again, another great golden gem here for everyone watching and listening, because obviously it just shows that trajectory, how that builds, right? And how that mental toughness look like and progression of it, as well as I love this distinction you mentioned around being optimist versus being positive. It's so game changing. And I have to say, it's perfect timing for me to hear this again, because I always felt like I'm very optimistic and always think that everything will be great in at the end, and just the optimism that things will change, right? But also being positive and having that perseverance when we really do reach that maximum of our emotional capacity, we also need to have a tools, skills, and knowledge what to do in those times. And I know that a lot of people are not being trained, even in military to some extent, let alone in a regular arena. And that's why we're seeing things that are not working out, either related to relationships or marriages or partnerships and business acumen that really could teach us, help us, because we're ashamed to share how we're going to be perceived, how things are going to be looked at. And as a result, I see much more suffering and much more pain that really does affect and creates unhealthy dynamics between those who are in charge and those ones who are led.
Absolutely. And you just said something, really important, because you're talking about relationships. Let's just start with that. And I'm just a positive thinker. I'm not an optimist. There's nothing wrong with optimism. It's good. But it can become toxic when you refuse to look at the facts as they really are. And that's where a good healthy dose of negative thinking is not a bad thing. And I will tell you that I don't know of any FBI arrest that started off thinking, oh, everything will go just fine. No. In fact, what we did is we sat there and thought, okay, what is the worst that can happen? I mean, what the negative thinking, you brought it in because it helped you be more realistic. Didn't mean you dwelt on it, but you prepared for it so that when something didn't go as you anticipated, you're not left flat-footed. Because isn't that the real problem when you don't look at problems realistically? Going back to relationships, you think you've met, you know, the perfect partner, but it just helps to kind of be realistic about it. This person's not perfect, and how do you reconcile that? The job may not be perfect, and you need to understand where it's not your ideal job, but where does it? Then you go back to the positive thinking part of it, or whatever it happens to be, whether it be a new job or moving to a new location. So in a way, it's I think it's very important to understand the positive effect of negative thinking. It can just help you balance and keep your sights on a realistic outcome, so that when something happens that you're not expecting, normally you're not you you can you you'll re, you'll be able to respond with some alacrity.
That is excellent point, and I can agree more. Specifically, as we getting more wise and more mature and more experienced, because sometimes, again, no matter how much we know, the experiences want to bring all this together. And if we also don't take a time to pause and reflect and really assess, and I love when you bring in again from FBI your knowledge, but also crucial components that attribute it to your success. And then how this can be applied in our individual and also professional world. Obviously, you have created an amazing tool to really can assess how someone's mental toughness is, where they're at and where their opportunities are for improvement, as well also how to overcome these life obstacles and find that inner strength and continue to build on, which I feel like right now more than ever, we need to be more mentally tough. And we're seeing proofs over and over that a lot of generational shifts and expectations are not suitable for current environments, because what we saw that happened during COVID, even just with restrictions of lack of movement or 6 feet distance or less travel, any regulation, just or even following just the law and regulations. So do you mind shedding some light around how do then someone can build that inner strength and really, I know you published a phenomenal book as your second book around that. And for everyone, we'll definitely make sure that you guys get a chance to see and where you can get them. But more than anything is how is really this beautifully interconnected with everything that we need in order to be the best versions of ourselves.
Oh, absolutely, Isabella. And you know, the thing is, it infuses all parts of our life, not just business, but personal relationships, our relationship with ourselves. You know, are we negative about ourselves? Are we self-critical? I hope that your viewers and listeners would actually take advantage of my free mental toughness assessment, because it's been validated by the clinical psychology department at Arizona State University. And so it's free, but it will give you an idea of how you rate, for lack of a better word, in your thoughts, your behavior, and your emotions. And again, it begins with self-awareness, and we really can't, you know, move the rock unless we understand ourselves well enough to know where those thinking blocks are. And we all have them. I mean, it's not like it means you're a bad person or anything, but self-awareness, just understanding why you respond the way you do. And if you respond in a way that's positive and moves you further down the road, that's wonderful. But if you want to respond with an emotion that's inappropriate or sets you back or causes more problems, that's a problem. So the more you know about yourself, what triggers certain reactions, and then what you can do about it, that's being mentally tough. That's taking ownership of yourself. It's not being some ninny out there. And I mean, I am so tired of people who kind of expect the world to make them happy, to admire them or whatever. I mean, I'm sick of the selfies. At some point, mentally tough means you're able to look at yourself in a long, loving way, because nobody's perfect. But being honest, you know, but it's not pleasant a lot of times recognizing and just acknowledging some of those parts of your personality you wish you didn't exist, but they do. And so the real question for a mentally tough person is, what can I do about that? How can I address that so I can respond in a way that's going to suit my situation and my position, whatever that happens to be at whatever level in your business? That's step number one.
I love that. And what's also important, as everybody's obviously looking and thinking that everything comes as a silver bullet, quick fix. And reality, this is the lifelong journey, and it's true transformation when we have to have long-term commitment, which obviously you do. And I am so thrilled to have this, again, conversation with you, because your wisdom and practical application and just everything that we're experiencing currently, it's also showing what's possible. So do you mind kind of shed a little bit of light, just to give them a glimpse, because so many great things are coming and yet to be unveiled. But I wanted to just, for everybody watching and listening, to really understand how you became who you are, because obviously people always believe it's a quick fix.
Oh, nothing's a quick fix. I mean, I mentioned that I grew up on a cattle ranch, a remote cattle ranch in the middle of Wyoming. And I was little more than a hillbilly. And I mean that in all honesty. And at first it kind of stung for me to think of myself in that way, but I was so unsophisticated. And I mean, it was just one of those things where I just didn't fit in. I mean, so my little high school, I didn't even fit in there. There was like 70 kids in my class. You know what I mean? It was tough. And so then I went to college, and it was tough, because again, a long process of just smoothing out those rough edges. And there were so many on so many different levels, but it was just the persistence. It was the determination. It was somehow I believed in myself that I could pull myself out of that situation and out of that personality, I guess. And it took a lot of hard knocks in my first job as a buyer at a department store. It was a bad fit. And anytime you're in a situation or a job where it's a bad fit, your ego takes a few knocks. You take a few knocks. I mean, it's not pleasant. I learned how to get on a horse when I was like 6 years old by just grabbing and pulling and eventually getting myself into that saddle. And so I guess that would be the best analogy I could use, is I just learned early that I wasn't going to just fly into that saddle. I was going to have to earn my way into it. And once I got on this horse, I had to earn the respect of the horse, because they weren't going to do what I wanted them to do, just to be, you know, friendly. So, I mean, I just had to learn to take responsibility for myself. And not everybody does that. And I guess that what kind of bothers me about today's culture. Parents are buying their kids, they're buying their way out of problems. They're trying to buy out adversity that hits them. The whole thing about getting a blue ribbon for just showing up. But I mean, unless you join a religious cult or you live with mommy and daddy the rest of your life, you're going to find that life is going to present problems. And I always say, you know, life is hard. Pain is inevitable. Growth, though, is optional. So having that mindset, because when you come back to what mental toughness is and how we can keep moving, it's your mindset. That's something you are totally in control of.
That is priceless lesson for everyone, because we know how much we keep thinking, I can't control this, 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 and this. But guess what? We always have control how we behave, how we think, and how we act.
Exactly. Exactly.
And with closing, obviously, as I'm seeing here evidence of your amazing work and contribution also to different articles and publication, obviously, right now with the Forbes and others magazines that you had chance to share. I always love how your thoughtful, how you thoughtfully address issues and very complex subjects, right? So obviously you carved a tremendous legacy for yourself. And I love that you also are very keenly aware of current issues around also leadership and women in leadership, or lack of that. And obviously, first of all, I want to kudo you for taking on that big task as well. But I'm curious, with everything now that you're doing in this chapter of your life, what would you like your legacy to be known for, beside obviously what you already achieved?
Wow, what a wonderful question. I hadn't thought about that, to be truthful, but I think for myself, as I'm processing that question, for people to be confident in themselves, to believe in themselves. Nobody, you know, rolls out perfect. Nobody. And we're going to die being imperfect people. But it's that journey. If there isn't a journey of growth and contribution, and I think probably one thing I have learned and I've read and studied is that if you truly want to live a fulfilled life, it has to be about more than just you. I mean, we've heard a lot about follow your passion. And I get really sick of that, because passion is what the world can give to you. Instead, ask the deeper question, what is my purpose? Because that question is, what can I give to the world? Very different response. So if there's anything that I would hope would be a legacy, is to remind people of that, that it's not about you. And studies have shown that those people who are in their 80s or, you know, on their deathbed, 90s, 100, whatever, whenever they're on their deathbed, it's always like, what was most important to you is always the relationships. The relationships through their life, and that is what sustained them. So I guess that would be my hope for a legacy.
Fantastic. And in closing, Lorraine, where they can find some of your amazing books and then work that you do, and how is the best way for the for audience to connect and reach out?
Oh, thank you for that question. And you know what? I would love to have your listeners and viewers connect with me on LinkedIn. It's just Lorraine Kwai. Just put in my name. It's there. I'd love to connect there. On Facebook, I have a page, Facebook page. It's called the Mental Toughness Center. And I write for Forbes, and I write for Smart Brief and some other online leadership magazines. So I'd love to see you there. And I can pick up my book. Just go to Amazon and pick up Secrets of a Strong Mind, which is the same name as my online training program. So it's sort of easy to remember.
Thank you for listening to Legacy Leader Show. If you enjoyed the content and had a positive experience, then please leave us a positive rating. In addition, leave us a positive review whenever you are listening on whatever platform there might be. Make sure your friends and family also know about the benefit and value that we provide and what we have to offer. Cheers.